Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. I believe that my meeting Elizabeth Lesser was truly meant to be. Years ago, I was advised by one of my producers to read this book called The New American Spirituality, and I bought the book, but truth be told, I never really read it. I started thumbing through the pages, and it didn't really speak to me at the time. And not so long ago, same producer said, you should read this book called The Seeker's Guide. Picked up the book, started reading it, couldn't put it down. It's by the same author, Elizabeth Lesser. Turns out it is also the same book. She just had changed the title. The Seeker's Guide, New American Spirituality is what it used to be. So I started reading it, became engrossed in every single page, and called my radio producer and said, we have got to get this woman on. And started talking to Elizabeth Lesser and haven't stopped since. She's become a really great friend. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. This is a Soul Series, and it's a time in my schedule when I get to kick off my rubber boot. I have a stylist who just had told me it was raining across the street, and I put on these rubber boots that I happen to have. And she's concerned that you're now going to see them on camera. I don't care. So if you see them and you're wondering why I have on pink rubber boots, it's because it's raining outside. But this is my opportunity to spend some time talking about that which is dearest to me, and that is the higher part of ourselves, which I call the soul. It's our Soul Series, and it's a place on the radio dial for spiritual seekers of all faiths. And today, as promised, it's a place for true spiritual adventures, adventurers, because back by popular demand, and because I also asked her to come, a personal plea, is the woman who introduced me to the idea that we're not just in spiritual pursuit, but that this whole life experience here as a human being can be, if we allow it to be, a spiritual adventure. For 30 years, Elizabeth Lesser, who's sitting right here. Hi, Liz.
Hello.
She has worked with leading figures in the field of healing, healing self, also healing society, because she's the co-founder and senior advisor of Omega Institute for Holistic Studies. Now, it's America's largest adult education center focusing on health and wellness and spirituality and creativity. And she's the author of this great book called Broken Open, How Difficult Times Can Help Us Grow, and also The Seeker's Guide, also a great book, Making Your Life a Spiritual Adventure. Did you see an O magazine where Sally Field said that she'd love to just to be able to take some time?
Yes, and come? I did.
To come to the Omega Institute.
Yeah, that was so great. She said she, you asked her if she wanted to go to college because she never graduated from college. And she said, no, you know, I'm a little too old to do that, but I'd like to go to Omega to study there.
And when people come to Omega, what do they do?
Well, they come for either 2 days,
a
weekend.
Is it a campus?
It's about a 200-acre campus with lots of classrooms, housing to stay in, cafe, library, dining hall. It's like a little village more than anything. It's a community. One thing we've understood is we don't just teach workshops and trainings. We create a community of like-minded people. So many people in these studies they do when they say, what's missing in your life? Community, a sense of belonging, is like number one up there. So it's a chance to be like, and you kind of leave all your inhibitions and burdens at the door, and you get to be with seekers, people who are all, you don't have to hide out. You don't have to be a closeted seeker. And that's a really...
And when you say seeker, you mean what specifically?
Well, some people come, let's say, to take a basketball clinic or a painting workshop, and some people are taking a meditation class, or some people are very, very sick and are coming to learn different kinds of healing techniques. But the thread that links all those workshops together is this understanding that you are more than you think you are. You have many more interior resources at hand than you know. And if you can just come and be in a place of seeking. You can discover stuff inside you, strength.
No wonder Sally wanted to go. I want to go. Yeah. I'm joined by Elizabeth Lesser, a spiritual adventurer and author of The Seeker's Guide, Making Your Life a Spiritual Adventure. You define spirituality, it's like being in a place of fearlessness. That's how you define it, correct?
Yes, I do. If we focus on the part of ourself that ends, and we only relate to ourself as this small, striving, scared person who wakes up and just tries to get through the day and is stressed out and fights with your mate. If that's all who we think we are, there's good reason to be afraid. Mm-hmm. But if we can figure out a way to tap into our wide, spacious self that is this eternal soul on an adventure, mm-hmm. Life does become a fearless experience. What do you have to lose? If you've already gone through really hard things in your life, you know, I got over this. In fact, I even grew through it. Mm-hmm. That's
what you talk about in Broken Open.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if all
Which
of life can be
book,
like
by
that.
The way.
Thank
yes.
you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spiritual practice and just a spiritual point of view gives you the strength to look at your life not as something just to get through, but as an adventure of learning, where each day, no matter what it brings. You know, I was reading an interview with Michael J. Fox, who was talking about the fearlessness that he got from being ill, mm. and how because of it, it's been a great gift to him, because he now knows he can handle anything. And that's made every part of his life better.
All right, we're going to suit up here, put on our headphones. Going on the phone. Susan's on the phone. Welcome to our soul series, Susan.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and a privilege to speak to both of you.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for this opportunity. My question, Elizabeth, to you is that you made a statement that says it takes a fearless spirit to live in the mystery. My question is how do you maneuver your way or confront your fears as you live in the mystery of the spiritual life?
Well, I'd say there's several ways. The very first way is to understand that all human beings are afraid. It's in our DNA. It's part of the human operating system to feel insecure and afraid. A big challenge we have is we think no one else does, so we go around trying to pretend we're okay and be just like Sally over there, who appears to have it all together.
Correct.
And then we waste so much time trying to be perfect.
And we're doing that because we're looking in a world, especially those of us in the United States, live in a world where you're bombarded by images projected through magazines, on billboards, in the media, you know, in the tabloids, on the entertainment shows all the time, that shows this supposedly perfect world that people are living in.
And
yes.
It's not.
And it's not.
Just look at nature. Things are born, they arise, they bloom, they wither, they die. That's the story of life. Instead of working so hard against the nature of life, and one thing that I do is I admit to the people I know my bozo on the busness.
Yeah.
I let people know that I'm not perfect, that I do have trouble. So that's one way.
Tell us about the bozo on the bus. I love that line about we're all bozos on the bus.
I got that line from someone who used to teach at Omega, Wavy Gravy.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we're all bozos on the bus, so we might as well sit back and enjoy the ride. Wasting time trying to pretend that you've got it all together really feeds into this cycle of, I'm afraid, my life isn't going well, I'm going to pretend it's okay, and then that creates more stress. It creates alienation from other people. A great way to deal with fearfulness is to have support from friends and beloved people in your life. And if you're always trying to pretend you're okay, you miss out on connecting with people who can help you.
Did that help answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
I love it when you say in the book that the soul is the river of energy that animates who we are. Whew, what a gorgeous line that is. Mm. The soul is the river of energy that animates who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How'd you come up with that, Liz?
I'm very influenced by poetry and by poets. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of poetry, Rumi being one of my favorites,
right.
Who says, when you do something from your soul, you feel a river moving in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people say to me, well, how do I know what my soul is and if I'm being soulful? If you feel that sense of energy moving in you as opposed to being stagnant and dead to the world, that's your soul saying, hello, follow me.
Right. It's the river of energy that animates who we are. I just thought that was so beautifully put. And isn't it true that when you can follow that river of energy, I've known this for such a long time. And when I got it, it was just the most miraculous realization that if you follow that river of energy, I wasn't calling it that, but if you follow that river of energy, it's almost impossible to go wrong.
Yeah.
That it's the flow of your life and that every life has its own mm-hmm. flow.
But you see, some people are afraid if I follow that river of energy, I might have to make some changes.
Yeah.
I might have to let some things go. There's often sticks and mud in the river that are trying to hold you back. Poor choices you made in a job or relationships or your health. And when you put your soul in charge of your life,
right,
you're saying, I'm going to follow it come what may.
Right.
God, please help me do it in a responsible and kind way. But sometimes you have to make very hard choices and big changes when you follow that river of energy.
Is that what you mean by being broken open?
Exactly. If you are afraid of courting change, you will stay safe but closed to life. If you say, I trust my soul, I may be brought through difficult times now, you usually end up getting your heart broken, making hard decisions, big changes, losing a job. Sometimes life hands it to you without you choosing it. You wake up and you get a diagnosis of an illness. You didn't ask for that. But many people will say, until I got my cancer, until I had my accident.
What was your broken open moment?
My biggest one, because they never stop.
Right.
But the one that really opened me to the point where I knew whatever came again, I'd be okay, was my divorce. I just never thought that would happen to me. And I had a lot of shame around it and a lot of terror. I lost my financial stability and my job was put at risk. And I had two little children. And that was what brought me to my knees and woke me up.
How did you get through it, looking it in the face?
Well, I got through it in ways that everyone does and in different ways. One, I started off kicking and screaming, resisting being afraid. And then I felt that tension of when you resist a change, you make it worse. Mm-hmm. And I sat in the pain of what it felt like.
And that's so hard for people to get.
It is.
I started reading that in Eckhart's books, and it's just like so hard. Just because, of course, you want to resist that which you don't want.
Mm-hmm. But that's what practice is. That's what spiritual practice is. Let's take, for example, meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down.
Right.
You are barraged by thoughts and restlessness. You want to get up.
Correct.
You just want to get up.
That's right.
That's the metaphor for life. If you can just sit there and let whatever is happening happen, and that's practice. If you do that every day for 20 minutes, you just sit. You feel your
restlessness and anxiety.
Anger, the strangest things come up just by sitting still. You don't fight it. You don't judge it. You don't get up. Slowly over time, you develop this capacity to sit in the fire of whatever is happening, and you move through things so much more quickly if you don't fight it.
Mm.
It's like you're in a river. You can either get on your back and float down it, or you can swim as hard as you can against the current.
Because we begin to learn then, or begin to see for ourselves, that what you resist is going to persist. Yes.
Yeah. and what you surrender to. And that doesn't mean you become a wimpy person who just gives up whenever. But when you know, look, we're all really smart, you know, this is happening. I can't stop it.
Yeah.
So when you know that, and you will,
yeah,
you can save yourself a lot of grief and a lot of time by just floating on your back in the river and trusting it's going to take you exactly where you needed to go, even if it was a harsh way to get there.
Well, Susan, welcome to the Soul Series. Another Susan. You have a question about divorce, I hear.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I'm a psychotherapist for the heart and soul, so my question is being asked on behalf of many parents and clients. How do we as parents, Elizabeth, share the process of our divorce with our children so that they may see it as part of their spiritual adventure?
Wow.
First of all, talking with little kids, I mean, they're all different age kids. So mm-hmm. if you've very little children, it would be a different answer than older children. But for all children, all ages, it's how you are more than what you say.
Mm.
So
big, you got that right, Susan?
Yes.
It's how you are.
Absolutely.
Because that's the energy that they're going to be vibing from. That's the energy that they're absorbing their energy from.
Right.
That's the truth that's going to be transmitted unspoken to them. Go ahead.
Excellent.
Also, number one, most of the research, as you know, as a therapist, has shown it's not so much divorce as it is the acrimony between the divorcing parents. If you can put all your energy, make it your spiritual path for all the years it takes to remain somehow friendly with your ex, somehow to remain in each other's lives in a way that is co-parenting, I think that's the biggest gift you can give to your children so they don't feel betrayed. They're betraying the other parent by loving them.
Right.
And I can't say that I was always successful in that, but I certainly made that my goal.
Yeah, that would be hard because part of your own pain is that you want him, you want to be right and him to be wrong and vice versa. And you want many, many times, I've seen this with other people, is that you want your kids to take sides.
Yeah.
You want your kids to like you more.
That is, you know, you can pretend there's all sorts of things you can do to make it better, but the hardest thing is what you can really do to make it better, which is to try to have a civil and even loving relationship with your ex.
It means coming to peace with it yourself, finding a way to make peace with it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help you, Susan?
Yes, thank you so much, both.
Yeah, it's not what you say, but it's how you are. Well, Donna, are you on the line?
Yes, hi.
Okay, what is your question?
Okay, well, I'm 33 years old and have been a seeker since age 18 or 19.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the law of attraction and experience it a lot in my life. Oprah, you have actually been in some examples.
Good.
So my question is, where does prayer and God fit in with the law of attraction? You know, I feel ultimately, isn't it God deciding on who will end up with certain things? Like, for instance, going on a job interview, there are many candidates praying for the same job.
Mm.
Or the lottery, many people praying to win the lottery. You know, and are trying to use the law of attraction for that. So there can only be one winner or one candidate that gets that job.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is such a rich topic that we can't get to all of this in one show. So I think, Donna, we'll probably end with you today and begin with you for next week when Elizabeth returns, because I think that is a big question for everybody who becomes a seeker and has been raised religiously. The big question is, how do you blend spirituality, your newfound spirituality, this what you know to be true inside yourself with what you've been taught religiously? And, you know, for myself, it was a very difficult question I wrestled with for a long time. But I will just share this, that I started thinking about it probably in my late 20s, I was sitting in a church listening to a preacher preach, and he was talking about how God is omniscient, omnipresent, all things, all powerful, and is in everything, and is also jealous. And at that moment, I was just with him. Everybody in the church is like, yeah, yes, and God is all, he is all, he's all, and the Lord God is a jealous God. And I went, uh-oh, that doesn't compute for me. God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and yet is jealous. And that started me on the quest of, well, what is God? What is God love, or is God jealous? And so that opened the door for me to begin literally the search for my soul. And I've been doing it ever since. So that's a really big question. How does spirituality fit in with religion? We will begin with you next week, Donna. Thanks for raising that question. Elizabeth, thank you.
You are welcome.
You've studied every major religion, so I want you to come back next week and we'll talk about this. Okay?
I'm ready.
Where does spirituality, the spiritual adventure, fit in with religion? Thanks for joining us on our Soul Series. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.